Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Nikias. Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Shout out to all you dunkers for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, quick question for you.
Okay.
So you play instruments, right?
Yes.
Did you ever sing in the choir?
Like my mom forced me to like kids choir when I was younger.
You did? Okay.
But other than that, yeah.
I am ready to hear you sing the praises of the New York Liberty.
Wow. It's a quality setup.
I want to talk to me nicely per my last email.
Not talk per my last
to,
email.
Talk to me nicely. It's Liberty season. I told you.
You did. You sure did.
Your time is up. My time is now.
You can't see me? I was not expecting a John Cena hit on the podcast, but I never know what to expect during these intros. This is incredible stuff. I was going to ask how you're doing, but I would assume you are doing quite well after the Liberty's win last night.
A little hungry, but yes, I'm excited. I'm happy. Let's talk some W playoffs. Let's get right to the business.
Let's get right to the business then. The Liberty did beat the Chicago Sky on Wednesday night, a 98-91 victory. Sabrina Ionescu and Natasha Howard tag team for 22 points apiece. Benaja Laney, Stephanie Dolson also filling some gaps. Marine Johannes gave us the pass of the season, pass of the decade. Empty corner pick and roll over the head, no look to rolling Natasha Howard. It was insane. But the Sky just kind of lost the plot in the end of the game. Like what? I guess, how surprised were you by the ending?
This is the angle we take, eh?
Nah, I really just wanted to bug you for a quick moment.
It 3:31 of the fourth quarter, the Liberty outscored the Sky 13-0 on the Sky's floor. And this is the angle we take. No, in all seriousness, that was a very impressive game from the Liberty in multiple ways. And I think the response in that fourth quarter was the biggest thing for me. That surprised me. The Liberty played the game. We talked about them being able to play against the Sky. They had the balance offensively. They were solid enough defensively. They took care of the ball. They made the right decisions. They were a moving target. But as that third quarter rolled on, the Sky were able to start doing some more of the Sky things. Our defense perked up a little bit. They're able to hit some open shots, get in transition. And you felt the momentum towards the end of the third. And when Allie Quigley hits that three and gets the four-point play, and then Candace puts him up six, it appears like this is every Sky game that we've seen all season.
Mm-hmm.
So for the Liberty to come back from that was key to me. And that's where it's like, oh, this is different for the series. I think there's a lot to unpack, but for me, I thought the Liberty did everything they needed to do to take this game.
They deserve credit for taking it, particularly that last 3:31 stretch in which the Sky obviously went scoreless, but the way the Liberty were able to defend Chicago for most of that stretch was impressive to me. You said it during the preview. They just need to be solid. They didn't need to be an elite defensive unit. They just didn't need to be blasted. This is a Chicago Sky offense that when they're humming, they are blitzing you with cuts. They are making your defense look silly with the amount of movement, the amount of misdirection, and you throw in some set calls from James Wade, and it's hard to stop them. The Liberty were pretty disciplined for most of that game. And that gave them the foundation to hit the right notes on the offensive end. You saw Sabrina take over late. Again, I can't say enough about the Johannes pass with the empty corner pick and roll. But heading into this one, I was curious to see what the Liberty's offense was going to look like. Would they be able to execute against the Chicago Sky defense that is, one, very talented, but two, their scheme forces a lot of turnovers with the aggression that they play with. And so I was intrigued by, we talked about this during the watch party, I was intrigued by the Liberty starting to set early draft screens around half court. And it seemed like a way for them to kind of counter what Chicago's scheme was. Like, hey, if we're going to set screens 35, 40 feet from the basket, you can show at the level if you want to. You're just giving us a whole lot of runway to work with, and we can kind of dice your defense up that way. And so it kind of forced Chicago into kind of drop coverage by default, which allowed Sabrina to dictate some of the action. Chicago did throw in some counters. You mentioned during the watch party, particularly in that fourth quarter, I think Chicago went to showing at the level and then it turning into a late switch to kind of take away both of those easy looks coming out of that. But I was really impressed with how New York handled Chicago's defense. James Wade talked a little bit about it, I think earlier today, either last night or earlier today, that he felt like the defense didn't pressure them enough. The presence wasn't there for them, not consistently at the very least. So I want to see what Chicago comes up with in game two and how they counter that, if it's just going to be an execution deal or if they switch something up scheme-wise. But New York did seem a lot more comfortable than I expected. You hit it on it earlier. They took care of the basketball. They committed their first turnover midway through the second quarter. They had 8 for the game. And this is a Liberty team that was, I think, 9th in turnover rate during the regular season. And during the Chicago matchups, you know, the first one was a blowout. The last 3 were kind of down to the wire. They still turned the ball over quite a bit. And Sabrina Ionescu wasn't great in those games, in part because she was turning the ball over. So the fact that she was able to handle the hedges when they came, you get the early draft screens, and she was able to get more comfortable in pick and roll. And just the decision-making in general was pretty solid throughout the night for the Liberty. It was good stuff, and that's why they won to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, to tie into your Sabrina point, I think the buildup of the regular season was able to help her pay off in this moment. We've seen her play against almost every scheme. We've seen her progress during the season, and she played with a poise from the start. And to tie it back into your point about the Liberty setting higher screens, it was almost like a pressure release of sorts, but very subtly, what it did to the Sky's bigs, and not every single possession, but what it did was, okay, now you have to, for a second, think about Sabrina getting downhill and turning the corner and showing in help. So now when the next screen comes, because they even had Dangerfield set some of those high screens too, and then it would flow into a big. But if the big sets a second screen, you're now working to get to the level. Mm-hmm. So now you're on the move. So your hedge isn't as set. You aren't as loaded up. And then the other thing, I go back to I think it was the first bucket that Liberty got. And it's something that paid off throughout the game, and especially sometimes in that fourth quarter run. The Sky like to show, and not just scram switch, but Candace Parker is elite at helping on the roll. And so what will happen is the Liberty would set a screen. I think Laney came off. Miesemann showed. Candace was guarding Dolson, who was on the right wing. Candace goes to take Natasha Howard rolling. Dolson's wide open. And now you're keeping Candace on the strong side later in the game, fourth quarter. Now it's empty corner. Now you got a decision to make, tying it back into the Marine pass, which was just insanity. And I've watched it way too many times. And the fact that she looked, and then a subtle part was she looked at Candace Parker, who was right in the middle at the nail, and then decided, you know what? I'm also just going to freeze you with my eyes and then throw it over my head. Just pure insanity. So I think the Liberty able to poke at the Sky's defense, as you mentioned, it wasn't quite the same hack, but hey, we found something. How did the Sky respond to that? Can they mix their coverages up? Can they get multiple coverages going? Can they take the Liberty out of the flow? Can they be more physical and more active on the ball? Is it going to be 2 on the ball? Is it going to be a drop? Is it going to be a late switch? They started to mix some things up, and I think a key for them is going to be, how do we keep the Liberty off balance? It's a talented team that has a lot of options, and when their lineups are flowing like they were, and you have multiple ball handlers out there who can handle the rock so the flow keeps going. You can set multiple bigs. You have 2 big lineups with bigs who can do multiple things, whether it's space, roll, pop, set another screen. So you're going to have to, they're kind of a moving target, and that Sky defense is a little bit more leaning towards taking things away. And that's an interesting point, because the Liberty have Sabrina, who you have to game plan for, but they have a balance, which can make it tough to defend in the playoffs.
I guess from there, like, if you're Chicago, how do you go about kind of throwing the Liberty off balance? Is it just throwing in different coverages, or like how much of it is we need to throw in different coverage and mix things up, and how much is it just, hey, we need to execute these specific things better, and maybe that gives us more of a...
I think it starts with more activity. I think it starts with do what we want to do better, and then you can blend in some of the mixed coverages. It never felt like the Sky were, I guess the word I'm looking for, because they were mixing things up, but it felt like they were mixing up for a reason, not just because, hey, we can't do this. Mm-hmm. They kept going back to their base. It's just finding a way to get the Liberty out of rhythm, get it to the third quarter where they're in the mud a little bit more, force them to think, force them to blink a little bit. That's mm-hmm. probably going to be the key. And it may be mixing in some unders, so you're not rotating on every handoff on every screen. And it may be rotating earlier, and so you can recover.
On the unders front, I'm glad you said that, because part of New York's defense being more solid than I anticipated, at the very least, they were pretty committed to going under on most of Chicago's guards.
Extremely. And it was a huge part of that game to me. Courtney mm-hmm. VanderSloot, we're going under all your screens. Clea Copper, we're going under all your screens. And what that does is the Liberty's bigs don't have to do much. There's not really a roll threat, and the weak side isn't having to rotate. So now we can be solid. And I think the key for the Sky going forward, I'm not sure if this is the question you're going to ask, but I'm going to go for it anyways. You've got to take that and make the Liberty blink. That can't be an automatic. Mm-hmm. They can't feel comfortable doing that the entire game. You've got to make them blink. This reminds me of, and it's a playoff series, and we've seen in multiple playoff series where a team finds something, the other team counters, now they blink, and now it's different. So mixing in guard-guard actions to maybe see, hey, are you guys going to switch? Are you guys not? Can we turn the corner there? We saw as the game progressed, there were times where, like Courtney VanderSloot said, okay, I'm just turning the corner. We're going to see what happens. Can you set the screens lower? So now that under is fine, but I got a foot in the paint. How do we open things up that way and put pressure on the Liberty to not feel like it's an automatic? Because we saw in the fourth, there were times where Marine, a couple others were going over. And when they went over, it was tough. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I anticipate the Sky to lock in a little bit more on that, because they need Courtney VanderSloot going. I mentioned in the preview that if she had it going, this series is a wrap. Mm-hmm. And now after game one, and this is no shade, she's a magician, but if she doesn't have it going aggression-wise, this series is a wrap.
And that's the fun of a best of three. Like, the Liberty just have to do it one more time. They don't have to be a top two team in the W. They don't have to be perfect. They need to be better than the Sky for 40 minutes in one of the next two games. And they got it.
And that's the crazy part. Because the Liberty really have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
They had nothing to lose coming in. And now they really have nothing to lose. So what if you just get the, hey, we just made a whole bunch of threes game. And none of this matters. But that, on the flip side, the margin for error is still slim. Mm-hmm. The Sky make a couple tweaks and we're having a different conversation here. And this could be a Sky setting the tone early. We're going to turn the corner, draw fouls. Now we're living at the foul line. What are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. That changes your defensive aggression. And now they get back into grinding you out. Because for a long time that first half, Candace Parker did not appear to be down with any of the Liberty's antics. Anytime it looked like they were about to act up, she was like, nope, I got something for you. And it was a wrap.
I got your Liberty season right here.
But the way that the Liberty treated the Sky's guards allowed them to not just be solid defensively, but play more of their guards. Hey, we can feel comfortable playing these 2-3 guard lineups. Mm-hmm. How are you gonna make us pay? You gonna throw it to Allie Quigley in the post against Dangerfield? Which they did. Shout out to Allie Quigley, who got a post touch, went right to work, and also got a post block.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if you have Laney with that defensive activity against Copper and you feel confident with your unders, that's something that this guy have to deal with. And it's gonna be, I think Courtney VanderSloot has to set the tone.
She does. And you mentioned very early on when Chicago was kind of making their push in the third quarter, a lot of that was Courtney Vandersloot kind of introducing herself as a scoring threat at the very least. Getting to the basket, knocking down some timely jumpers. The Sky are going to need that for all 40 minutes. And while we're talking about the, it's hard to say supporting cast because the team is so darn good. Like, they have so much all-star caliber talent on the team. So I don't mean it disrespectfully. But talk about Courtney Vandersloot having to establish herself. Emma Mieseman does too. 4 points, very strong analysis here, but 4 points is not going to cut it for a big who helps unlock a lot of what they want to do offensively. Like, she helps their high post passing and stuff work. She gives them an outlet as a mid-range jump shooter and also as a post threat. She has to establish herself as well. It didn't feel like she was involved, like beyond the not scoring much, because that could just be a bad shooting night. But it didn't feel like she was an active participant a lot of the time.
Well, I think the Liberty's defense also had an effect on her. She is the hack as far as being able to pop, roll. Then now I can be a hub. Now I can space. I can do multiple things. I become a threat that way. If you're going under all these screens, I'm just kind of there.
Yeah.
My threat has been taken away. And now if I'm not hitting the shots in rhythm or y'all are defending the cuts when I get it, okay, what's next? So that's where I think you have to establish, hey, we can beat this coverage. And now that unlocks Mieseman. Now that opens things up for Vandersloot. Now you got to deal with Copper. Now this guy get back to putting you in the blender. But yeah, those are the two for me.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this a little bit during the watch party, like who is the X factor for the Chicago team? And we both kind of landed on those two. Like Courtney Vandersloot, we know what she can do as a passer. She also has some pretty solid defensive stretches during the game. But if you can go under on her, that kind of cuts a lot of that off. And just to bounce off your point about those unders that the Liberty throwing in there, you mentioned the lack of rotations. If the pick and roll or the handoffs can just be defended 2-on-2, it makes it easier for those off-ball players to be like, okay, I'm waiting for you to cut now so I can stay connected, versus having to think about, wait, do I need to peel in to help here? And now someone's cutting behind me. And that's a lot of the beautiful game that Chicago wants to get to. You take that away, like, they have self-creators on the roster, but like, that's not how they want to win. That's not how they want to build the boat offensively. And so I just major credit to what the Liberty were able to pull off last night.
Yeah. And again, quickly, I just think two bigs, the Liberty's two big lineups work against the Sky's two big lineups to where, okay, if you want to post Mieseman, okay, now you got to try and finish over Han, or you got to deal with Natasha Howard, or you got to try and body Stephanie Dolson. Like, it's not
not easy.
Yeah. So that takes away a little bit as well. But yeah, I think if they can force the overs or punish the unders, that now is going to open a lot of things up for the Sky. A lot of things up for the Sky. I think you owe Stephanie Dolson an apology, by the way.
Stephanie Dolson was pretty good overall in that game. There were some hashtag moments.
Good for her. In the game. All right, man.
There were some hashtag moments, like weak side rotations from Julie Alamond and Courtney Vandersloot should not, breathe life hesitancy at the rim.
Come on. This was supposed to be the apology.
No, she played well in all series. Like, she held up defensively. She was a prolific and a willing 3-point shooter, which I think helped. She made big plays. So I again, overall, I don't have bad things to say about Stephanie Dolson. She played well. She deserves her flowers.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I also want to give another salute again. I'm going to keep saying it. Natasha Howard and Lainey are the keys to this. They are the keys to this. When you have to keep dealing with Natasha Howard in different ways, and Lainey can give you that defense while also offensively, hey, I'm going to do my job. I can create. I can also get a bucket when you need it. And now I can play some stretch forward if you need it. It just makes a lot work.
Major props to what Benaiah Delaney was able to do. Like, she hasn't been back for very long coming off of in-season surgery. And for her to defend as well as she did, she helped solidify a lot of the lineups that the Liberty want to play. Like, it's a lot easier to play Sabrina and Marine together when you have Benaiah Delaney able to take a tough wing matchup and kind of dice it up elsewhere. And again, going back to the under conversations, if Sabrina and Marine can just go under and stay connected, that's their job. Everyone else stays out of rotation. And if the Sky are looking for Kalia Copper, who is quickly turning into like their end of clock, hey, we need to get something because of her slashing ability. If Panaja Laney can hold up, that's kind of all you need on a possession by possession basis, or at least when you get late and you just need crucial stops, that's kind of all you need. But Panaja Laney was able to do that. Props to her. I am excited for the game too.
I don't know how I feel about it, but
wait a minute. What do you mean?
Do you want to talk about your Aces, man?
Yuck.
Really? Like,
it's hard to say.
That's the game one reaction is yuck.
Yuck.
Can I get my troll on real quick?
Sure.
Are you prepared?
Probably not, but continue.
I don't feel good about saying this. Nope, I can't do the bit.
Oh, we're already here. So I know it's good. All right.
That's your MVP, huh?
Oh, this is what Ron. I see.
I didn't feel good about a single moment about that. I'm sorry, Asia. You're incredible. Aces Mercury, number one. I kind of feel like echoing the sentiments that Mark Schindler had on our previous podcast. The Mercury, they're giving it their all, man. This has been, I can't imagine the difficulty of the season. Mm-hmm. And mentally, physically, emotionally, what they've gone through, and then Petty goes down. It's just like, come on, man. Like they're giving it their all. They laid the template down. Mm-hmm. They had the game plan, and it's just tough. You know, I think it reminds us of what the Bucks Bulls playoff series. This feels like the series where, hey, our process is what it needs to be, but also
this is what we're working with right now.
The more I think about it, the more this reminds me. Do you remember when the Grizzlies and Spurs played in the first round, but like all the Grizzlies were out, like every last single one of them?
Yes.
And it was just like,
like, we get it, but also
like, that's what I was getting. I was like, you know, Diamond Shields was trying to get them all up.
Yeah. Boy, did she.
Sophie trying to drive. Megan was posting up. It was, but to the Aces. What's your concern level with the Aces right now? And are you concerned that this is the template that they'll have to face or deal with going forward? Because this is a playoff issue. Because sometimes the team that can't beat you delivers the way to beat you. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be able to have size against Asia and show help, and if you're going to be able to mix things up against those guards and kind of find ways to keep them in the mud while also maybe scoring better on the other end and also having a better team defense than what they're facing right now, it can get tricky.
I would say, like, I'm more confused than anything. Like, Becky Hammon used the term, like, first game jitters and hoping that the Aces got those out. Which, I mean, there's some credence to that. But it's confusing for me to go from the game on Sunday in which they beat the Seattle Storm again and scored at a high clip doing so. And then you get to the Mercury game in game one, and Asia just very early on misses her first three shot. Asia just doesn't have it. And, like, that happens. But Asia just doesn't have it. And that was a matchup that I was kind of keying in on heading into the series anyway. Because as great as Asia is, like, Breonna Turner, if you want to build a big to be able to defend someone like Asia Wilson, like, Breonna Turner would kind of be it. Has the length, definitely has the mobility, and also has the discipline, so she's not falling for the up fakes like some other bigs would. So, like, that was already going to be a tough matchup. It didn't help that Asia just didn't have the jumper going at all, didn't have the three ball going, didn't have the midi going either. Kelsey Plum kind of got off to a slow start, and then she started cooking. Chelsea Gray, after the incident, the play, the contact with Megan Gustav.
After the antics. She took it extremely personal because she had antics with Sophie, and then that happened. And then she said, that, you know what? Enough. You guys are getting these buckets, and we're getting out of here. And I think at that moment, I was like, yeah, the Aces are going by like 14 or something like that.
Yeah, you said 14. It ended up being 16. I was like, man, Steve almost did it again.
Amazing. I almost did the thing. But the Aces just seemed irked. They seemed irked during that game. I'm not sure exactly why, but it just felt like they were irked. And for me, with Asia, I think there are more ways the usage can be in there. I think I joked that it felt like Anthony Davis in the sense that, hey, it kind of feels like they usually use Asia in different ways, and it kind of feels like she's either pick and roll or spacing. Like, why is Stokes setting every screen? So they can fix that, get her on the move a little bit, put her in different areas so the help can't lock in as much. But to me, it's just the oddest thing with how talented the Aces guards are and how defenses just treat them. Like, okay, under. Okay, I'm showing, but I'm back. All right, we're good. Take the pull-up. With three players who can all make the pull-up.
Yeah.
But it's a weird thing.
It's a very weird thing. This is something that I asked you in the watch partners. Like, it feels like with how good Kelsey Plum and Asia Wilson are, Kelsey Plum being the dynamic pull-up shooter that she is, and someone that has increased the rim rate this season, has made some tough shots at the rim this year. And then Asia Wilson, who can roll, who definitely can pop, short roll into mid-range jumpers, and now you're adding a three-point shot. Like, she is just a multifaceted screener. You think, end of the game, all right, bet, we're just going to empty the corner. Kelsey, Asia, go to work. Good luck. If you want to switch against this, Asia's going to bully you, yada, yada, yada. And teams have consistently switched or just gone under on Kelsey Plum. I'm just like, this is interesting. Like, this should be the most dynamic pick and roll pairing in the W, and it's not. It's solid, but it's not world beating.
It's good, but teams, again, it's an interesting dynamic as far as how teams say or think about you versus your production level. And you have to, again, make that defense think differently. You have to make that pay to where they think they have to do something different. But to your point, Asia, with the lineup and talent they have as a five, when it's the time, should force it to be unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
But because teams are just locked in on not giving you that, you're still searching. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Aces respond to dealing with that game. How do they handle the initial punch? What adjustments do they make? How do they open things up for their guards? And again, it's just going to take, it's going to be a balance because you have those guards, all three can go, but it's always a blend. You know, it's a blend. You never know which one's going to get the ball to start. So tease-free Aces section. You're good, man.
Well, I appreciate that. I would just say, like, we've seen like little nuggets of what the Aces can do to kind of free things up. Like something that I noted in that Storm game in particular, like just the random guard or ghost screens for Chelsea Gray or Kelsey Plum, just to get defense off balance. And hopefully that's a way to get them downhill. What was it, second quarter, that the Aces sprinkle in an inverted pick and roll for Asia Wilson to get her downhill? Obviously, she's not a guard, but that's a way to put some pressure on the rim. This in theory should be the series, though they at best they have one more game in this. Like, this should be the series where they're able to experiment with some of these more exotic type looks offensively, just so they can find some more answers in the half court. But man, it just didn't feel great. In game one, particularly in the first half, it just didn't feel great. Like, the Mercury did a solid job containing. They threw in the zone, which we knew they were going to see a zone, and the Aces didn't look great against that. A lot of side to side, not much pressure there. And it's just kind of, I said yuck at the top, like, that's kind of how I felt. And I even tweeted after the game, it ended up being a 16-point win. I was like, the deficit just does not represent what this game was for the Aces. There's no way they're going to be happy about this. And Becky was peeved after the game. Like, I've been to post-game presser. I had a question queued up. I was like, you know what? No, I'm just not going to – let me just not do that tonight. Because, like, the energy was very much, we shouldn't be here. And I think a lot of those players are going to take that personally. I'm calling 25-12 for Asia Wilson in game two. Get the audio out on that one. She's going to bounce back because she did miss some shots that she normally makes. I think both teams shot pretty poorly from three, though. I mean, the Mercury just don't have the shooting talent outside of Sophie right now just because of the injuries. But a combined 14 of 46 from three from the two sides. And what was it, the second or the third quarter that both teams scored 9 points? Like, it just got, the game was just muggy.
It was the third quarter. The Mercury were, I think at one point, were shooting 30%. Still in the game, had made one more field goal than the Aces. So, you know, that's fine. You feel better now? You let it out?
A little bit. Shout out to Kia Stokes, who played well, I will say. I'm with you that it's odd to see her used as a screener so much. I do think part of that is, one, I think she's just the best, like, pure screen setter on the roster, and it's a way to engage her. Like, ideally, if she's able to hit the guard and get him downhill, and now you have Asia spacing out somewhere, and you're hoping to get help off of that, that kind of gets the chain of command going. But no, she did play well. Defensively, she held up. Do I feel better? I don't know. We'll have to see what game two looks like, but they got the win. I guess that's all that matters. They get another one at home. So if they take care of business, then I don't know. Like, it's just weird to go from that Storm game to what I saw offensively from the Aces in this one.
Well, I mean, I've been talking about the half court offense all year with you.
You have. That's very true.
You fail to want to listen to the words I say, but point they land. It's okay. Don't worry about it. They're gonna have to go through this. It hasn't hit as far as the Magic counter. Very talented, but they're gonna have to go through this. But I think this is the playoffs. You have these kind of games. You rewatch it. You make the adjustments. You make the tweaks, and now you adjust. Now, if they come out the same way, probably a reason for heightened concern. But hey, one game in the bag. Let's see how we adjust there, and if they make those adjustments, it'll bode well for their playoff run.
Let's flow into the Storm Mixeds game, which you specifically, but both of us have really felt like this has no business being a first-round series. It's kind of unfair. It's also incredible for the fans to watch two teams as talented as they are, two elite defenses, two decent offenses, but headlined by a pair of superstars in Breonna Stewart and Elena Deladon. An 86-83 game one victory for the Seattle Storm in this one. Before even getting into the particulars of this one, how fun was this game to watch?
Incredibly fun. Incredibly fun game to watch. An incredibly high level of basketball that was played. Still unfair and unbelievable. This is a first round series. Like, one of these teams is about to go home. The Mystics are one game away from going home. But we saw just high quality playoff basketball back and forth the entire game. Both teams trying to figure it out. You know, this was teams executing at a high level defensively. Offensive players finding ways to score. Teams trying to use each other to find a way to crack something real quick. We saw so many good defensive rotations on both ends of the floor. So many key defensive plays where they're switching and then rotating out. Now they're trying to attack a mismatch. Here comes a double. Now they rotate out of that. Didn't matter. You have stops looking like they're about to be fast breaks. Mystics players diving and getting stops. It was incredible stuff to watch. And I want to keep watching it. Like, I was watching it. We were watching it in the watch party, and I found myself sitting there like, oh, wait, I'm supposed to talk. I was just absorbing the game. That's how much fun it was for me.
It was beautiful stuff. Like, the defense is where I get keyed in on. Like, watching both of them execute what they wanted to do. Like, the Mystics felt a little bit more switch heavy. It's like, hey, if you can beat us, beat us. But we have players that we trust to defend up or down the positional spectrum. We're not giving you any easy gaps when we can help it. We talked a little bit about Gabby Williams in our preview episode and how important her own ball reps could be. She saw a lot of unders and also a little bit of ISO opportunities. Like, okay, beat us if you can. When she was spaced off the ball, that was the help point. Beat us seemed to be the theme for the Mystics in Seattle. I was just in awe of the scram switching all night long. Sue Bird is so good at getting out of trouble. And the Storm are so good at rotating with and behind her. It was a battle. And it was a lot of fun. Can we start with, I don't want to say the role players, it's just a lot of talent. But before we get into Breonna Stewart and Elena Deladon specifically, just, I was impressed by some of the others in this one. For the Storm, Gabby Williams was all over the place in this game. Got a Natasha Cloud matchup early on, was switching all over the place, off the ball, in the passing lanes, denials when she was switched on the post-ups, getting deflections that way. Her rotations, her help, and just her own ball presence. Like, she, you can look at the stats. She, like, Breonna Stewart ended up with, I think, 23-12-4 in this one, and she made big plays in the second half of this game. She really heated up in the third quarter. But like, give the game ball to Gabby Williams for me. The Storm don't win this game without her contributions on both ends.
I'm still going to slide that game ball to Jewel Lloyd, but I hear what you're saying. Gabby Williams was incredible. I thought she really set the tone for the Storm defensively early in this one. Just the activity, playing the passing lanes, mixing and unders, ball pressure. The rotations were great. And then I thought offensively she was just as key as far as being able to create. When she has the ball in her hands in transition, when she has the ball in her hands in pick and roll, you see who is spaced and you see who is rolling for that Storm team. And that opens up so much when she's able to do that. She's able to space, hit some big shots, but she just did so many little things. Like even Breonna Stewart, I still remember, had an ISO at the left elbow against Elena Deladon. Gabby Williams starts in the right corner. She cuts to the left block to get out of the way, to open the space. So now you can't help from there. You're going to come. It's going to come from where she can see you. Like just little things like that. Little things like the last play of the game where the Mystics run a set to get Elena Deladon open. And Gabby sits on it. She jumps out. She's right there to break the rhythm and then contest the shot. Invaluable effort there. And I thought it was one of those things where each team got the contributions they needed from their players. Like as good as Gabby Williams was, and she did a whole lot of good, I thought Shakira Austin did everything that the Mystics needed her to do and more.
Yes.
On both ends of the floor. The Tina Charles matchup, it got a little spicy at times for her, but
she defended her well. Contested. She ate some buckets, but she defended her well.
Worked, and then offensively, post-ups, fadeaways, drives, gave you a little bit of everything, offensive rebounds. I thought her impact was huge. I mean, if the Mystics win this game, we're probably talking about her effort and transition to tap a ball away and get a steal.
Mm-hmm.
Just fun stuff.
After a game like this, like I don't even want to offer criticism. Like it just came down to who's going to execute the most, who's going to get the breaks.
Oh no, yeah, this isn't that type of series. This is two teams going toe to toe, boxing match, tennis match, whatever you want to call it. Only one team is going to win, but they both did what they were supposed to do tonight, and I we didn't even have to talk about the stars. Like, just think about Jewel Lloyd, honestly. My mind goes right there. 0 for 5 going into the fourth quarter. Not a bucket to be had. It was Jewel Void.
Jewel Void.
12 points in the fourth quarter. 12 points in the fourth quarter. Came through huge for the Storm. And I mean huge. Like, she got it going at the right time. Because the Storm Stewie had her run, and the Mystics were like, "Hey, we're gonna work to take that away." And here comes Jewel,
mm-hmm.
Down 5. Let me hit this step back 3 real quick, and then let me give you this one-legged runner real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And as you stated in the build-up to this series, when she's able to provide that offensively, it swings things. She's an X factor in that area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about in the preview, I thought it was, hey, Lloyd and Gabby versus Ariel and Cloud. Who's going to show up? And they all did.
That's a good point. Like Ariel, you talk about setting the tone. Gabby Williams set the tone defensively for Seattle. Offensively, before Elena Deladon even got rolling, Ariel Atkins hitting pull-up after pull-up after pull-up. And it's just like, okay, if we're getting aggressive Ariel Atkins, and she has the jumper going like this, contested or not, this should give Washington a little bit more leeway in the half court. Like, that's the question that I've had about Washington. Like, can they generate easy looks? And I still have those concerns to a certain degree. But if they get the shot making like this, beyond Elena Deladon, I should say. If they're getting that, like, the defense is going to bring them to the dance every night.
I think Atkins, you're correct, set the tone. She was not playing around. And as you watch that game, they're going to need those kind of shots. Obviously, you want them to be able to create and generate open looks. We've talked about that in the build-up and as we were watching the game. But they're going to have to have Cloud and Atkins make plays, because the Storm's defense is great. And just like the Storm have to make those plays on the other end, they're going to have to find them. And when Atkins has it going, when Cloud was able to have it going, it was weird. It felt like almost every player had their run in this game. Mm-hmm. Tina Charles had her run. Natasha Cloud had her run. Atkins had her run. Sue had her run. Lloyd had her run. Here comes Shakir and Gabby mixing it in. It was so much fun.
It was good. It was so good. Which great deep detailed analysis there, but like this was genuinely really good basketball. Like, those are the games that excite me. I just want to see two high level teams duke it out. You called it a chess match during the watch party. That's exactly what it was. To that point, how did you feel about, because you mentioned Jewel Lloyd and the tough shots that she made, a lot of those were coming after switches. How did you feel about Washington switching?
I felt fine with it for the most part, especially with the larger picture being, hey, let's try and keep the Storm out of rhythm. Let's try and bog them down. Let's try and take away easy plays for them, take their flow away. And especially as it got to, once Stewie got it going, we're just going to switch and then double, or we're going to switch and help, and kind of letting it be an automatic in that way. I never really felt like, why are they doing that? I guess I would say they always had a purpose. Their help was always there. They always found a way to rotate out of it. And so I wasn't necessarily upset with it, but that was part of the fun for me. Like, yeah, you got beat a couple times, but they had to get beat. It wasn't necessarily the switching beating them.
Okay. I got you. Like, we were talking about this throughout the watch party and the question kept coming up. Like, hey, who do you trust more right now? Like, who are you feeling better about right now? And I kept saying, I feel a little bit better about Seattle because, and again, this isn't to say that Washington was doing a bad job defensively, because they weren't. Like, they defended well all night long. It was just, they were very committed to the switching. And the switches were a little, like, there were some soft switches in there to where it didn't take much contact on the screen for Washington to give up the matchup. And, you know, again, to their credit, they have the personnel to, even if they do that, you still have to work and battle and earn your buckets against them. Like, this is why the Mystics were the best defense in basketball this year. But that's why I also felt a little bit better about Seattle as we got to the stretch run of the game. I'm just like, okay, at the end of the day, if all they have to do is run some kind of handoff or an early pick and roll, and you can get, you know, during that fourth quarter stretch, you can get Shatori Walker-Kimbrough switched on to Breonna Stewart. You can get Natasha Cloud switched on to Breonna Stewart. You can get Ariel Atkins switched on to Breonna Stewart. And then you can just kind of clear the side and go from there. Like, I don't think the Storm wants to build their entire offense out of post-ups and mismatch hunting. But you get the crunch time, at least you know, okay, we can do this. And to the Mystics' credit, something that you already touched on, like, it did turn into switch and then we're going to show help. You know, switch and do is going to come with a hard double. You got to work from there. And so there were counters to that. But I don't know. Like, I had an ease. I felt a little bit of ease with Seattle because I felt like they could get a look that they wanted to, more so than Washington could.
I still lean towards Washington having more folks who can really go and get one. I mean, it's about even. I mean, they're both all really good teams. But for me, when a play breaks down, in theory, you can get them from a few different places. I think, to your point about Washington switching, I think overall with switching, both these teams did a heck of a lot of it. And they did a heck of a good job of kicking players out, trying to find good matchups. Also run into the problem where there's not really a good matchup for this player. Like, Breonna Stewart has it going. Yes, we're doing our job to rotate, but also, you can say the same thing with Elena Del Don on the other end. And she was cooking. We'll talk about that here in a second. yeah, it's tough. I mean, live reactions, we're always so good at them. But this is going to be a brawl. Like, we talk about adjustments. This is one of those, we need to do what we do better type deals. Like, there's some tweaks you can have, some things you can do. But both teams are so good at adjusting on the fly. That you're going to have to do what you do a lot.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Was there an obvious adjustment that you saw for Washington heading into game two, something that stood out in game one. It's like, okay, well, I think this is what they're going to hammer in on heading into game two.
I mean, trying to absorb it a little bit more, I'd imagine they will try to implement some things to exploit the Seattle's willingness to kick players out of matchups so quickly. Spacing wise, maybe try and clear out a corner, clear out some space, get some pops going. That's my first thing off the top of my head. I imagine maybe try and get some rescreens for Cloud. Maybe try and get EDD going a little bit earlier. Mix in some different actions for her. That's about it off the top of my head.
I think that's fair. Like, that was just a really good game of basketball. That was a really good high-level game of basketball. And even with the questions that we're getting to the watch party, like, who do you feel better about? Like, me saying I felt more comfortable with the Storm was not to say the Mystics are playing poorly or anything like that. Like, it was that close. This ended up being a three-point game. And we can talk about Elena Del Don right now if you'd like.
We need to.
She was incredible.
We need to. Name 10 players better than EDD.
Can't.
Yeah, you could last pod. Elena Deladon, it seemed like, I don't want to say it wasn't involved in the first half, but it was quiet. And that changed quickly. And when EDD gets it going, there's not much you can do. Especially because when she gets the drive going, like, yes, driving left, but also all it takes is one step. She gets the first step. She's so good at initiating that contact, keeping her balance and footwork, and then getting to her spot and letting it go, that you're in trouble. When she has it flowing, she's pushing and transitioning, she's able to get in the post, it makes it tough. Now, the interesting part is going to be, because early in the game, the Storm put Tina Charles on her. As it evolved, you saw more Stewie on her. How do the Storm react to that performance? Do they try and replicate what they did defensively? Do they show more doubles early and try and say, hey, you're not going to beat us in this game too? It's going to have to be someone else. Do they continue to mix it in? Because I thought that, you know, the toughest part for Washington is going to be that if you get it to EDD in the post or at the elbow, help is coming. But Gabby Williams and Sue Bird are so good at operating in those scenarios off ball that the advantage you're trying to create may not be there. So it's a balancing act that they're going to go through. But yeah, that's why EDD is EDD. That's what it is right there.
She gave them tough buckets to bounce off of that. One, I don't know if you do anything differently scheme-wise if you're Seattle. Because, like, Tina Charles got the matchup early. Elena Deladon scored on her. I wouldn't say that she, like, baked Tina Charles to where it's like, no, we need to quit. We got to switch this up right now. She took some blows and made her work. And that's kind of what you do with a player as talented as EDD is. And even when Breonna Stewart got the matchup, and this is someone, like, again, I don't have an official ballot, but like I had Breonna Stewart as defensive player of the year. And EDD was able to get inside leverage on a drive, shoulder into the chest, absorb the contest with Stewie's ridiculously long wingspan. It just didn't matter. And she's just eating those. It's like, okay, like these are impressive buckets from EDD. This isn't, holy crap, we have to send a double. It just felt like these are the matchups we're going to go with. We will send help when we feel it's necessary. Or when we want to just sprinkle it in to keep you somewhat off balance. And we have the players on the back end to kind of navigate that. And so I think, honestly, it's just, it sounds sacrilegious to say dare EDD to do it again, but like, because she can, she's that good. But I didn't see anything from that performance to where I was like, okay, what is Seattle doing here? This is bad execute. This is a bad plan. It was, hey, we have good defenders. We have really good off-ball defenders. We have timely help. EDD is amazing. As long as she doesn't drop 40 or 45, then we got to live with what's happening right now.
I think I'd agree with that. And I think that's why if you're the Mystics, you may come out of this with some confidence. knowing A, you were that close, and B, you can play even better. You still have things that they don't have an answer to. And so I'm not sure. How did you feel about Seattle overall offensively?
I felt okay with them for the most part. Again, like the switching kind of dictated what they could get to a certain extent. And so I felt an ease saying, okay, well, they can get these shots. I will say, like, some of the execution got a little shaky. Like, I remember there was the possession late in the fourth quarter where it's action with, I believe, Jewel Lloyd and Breonna Stewart. You get the switch, and Breonna Stewart just doesn't get the ball. And you have Natasha Cloud peeling in early for help just in case the high-low is made. And there's a kick available to Sue Bird in the weak side corner, and it isn't made either. And I think that turned to, what, a shot clock violation or just a bad shot at the end of the clock?
It was a shot clock violation. It was just after Jewel Lloyd had hit, I think, two shots in a row. Gabby was like, no, let's get her the ball. Jewel came off Stewie. They switched. Jewel had EDD. Stewie had a post matchup, and she immediately swung it. like, the thing is here, over here. It's one of two things over here. But those things happen.
Even with that, like, that's fine. I mean, that instance isn't fine. But I'm saying overall process-wise, like, I didn't have much issue with what Seattle did. It's just going to boil down, again, to be boring analysis, guy. It's going to boil down to execution. At a certain point, like, we know what these teams want to do, and neither team executed to a point to where the other felt broken or that they felt they had to panic and do something different. It was just kind of eating punches and seeing who's going to be standing at the end of the round. It was fun stuff.
Very fun indeed. I can't wait to watch it. Let's make it just a best of 18. let's just change the playoff format, and whoever loses this goes into a play-in with someone. Now you put your semi spot in line, dog. you're the interim semifinalist.
That's an interim semifinalist. Well, all right. Well, then let's transition into the game that came on before that one, then, which was, let's say, less fun than Storm Mystics. It was the Connecticut Sun Dallas Wings game, which the final score was 93-68. The Sun didn't have much of an issue after the first quarter in this one.
Could have gone to Wingstop, would have had the same effect.
Could have gone to. Oh, boy. Well,
Tenders.
Okay. I found myself, and we said this during the watch, but like, I found myself just sad watching that.
Oh, no. Okay. All right. Hold on. Wait. This is what we talked about in the preview.
Yeah.
Exactly what we talked about in the preview is what took place. Dallas had found something which was positive. They were playing with more purpose. Rene Mayri was playing great. Tierra McCown was playing great, figuring out their flow. Worst possible matchup for this version of the Wings, the Connecticut Sun, especially without Arike. Marina Mabry, they didn't give her space to operate. Didn't matter who was guarding her. Ball pressure, pressuring you up court, any pick and roll, ran your body, were right there. The big is going to be right there in front. Not at the level, but right there. Just let you know, hey, you can't turn the corner. And then in case you do keep going, there's nail help. So good luck. Good luck with that. And then Tierra McCown, hey, you, those post-ups you've been doing, here's Jonquel Jones.
Yeah, seal that.
And friends. So the high lows and the post-ups that had helped balance out the Wings offense didn't have the same effect. For some reason, McCown wasn't getting the deeper seals, but also when she did get in the post early, she was kicking it back out, and it just had a weird vibe to it. None of this works if those two don't have it going right now. And the Sun took both of them away to a degree. Yep. And you look at it, Wings, 26 made field goals, 11 assists. 5 for 20 from 3. How are you creating looks? Who's the pressure point? Defense to me is three phases, right? Reacting, anticipating, dictating. The Sun did a lot of dictating this game one. And there's not much you can do with that. I thought Satu was really good for them. Other than that, it was tough sledding.
Shout out to the baseline drive reverse for Satu. Shout out to the three-quarters court bomb to end the first quarter from Satu. She had some really fun flashes. To your point, all of that is why I felt sad watching Dallas, because it just got to a point where, it was just overwhelming what Connecticut was doing to them defensively. Like, I was impressed with the offense, too. And speaking of setting tones, Jonquel Jones was established very early offensively, which makes me very happy, because this should just be a thing every game, if you can help it. Jonquel Jones won MVP last season. She is really good.
They also forgot about her at some point during the stretch, but that's okay. Yeah. I do. You are 100% correct. She set the tone, but also she presents a very unique issue for the wings that we talked about as far as weight. How do we guard her? Mm-hmm. Which is directly opposite to the previous Sun playoff issue, which is what do we do? They're not letting Jonquel do anything. And so it's like, okay, we don't want to put McCowan on Jonquel because we're afraid of the pop, maybe the drive. So you start, Thornton on her, and it's, hey, UCLA cut layup. Here's a post up. Dang, Jonquel Jones, did you remember? Also, here's the three. And it's oh, great.
And as your head spilling about that, here's a push shot from Melissa Thomas. Here is 37 pull-up jumpers from Courtney Williams because she just doesn't care about your defense. Here's Natisha Heideman sprinkling in some jumpers for you if you want them. Here's Dejanay Carrington just filling all sorts of gaps coming off the bench in this one. And on the other end, it's the wings like, hey, can we get the ball to Tierra McCowan? Okay, great. Is the double team coming? Okay, great. Wait, who is it coming from? Wait, who are we kicking it to? Wait, why is this closeout so short? Wait, why is no closeout coming at all? That might be on purpose. And then you sprinkle in Marina Mabry, one, as you said, not really having space to operate, and two, three fouls in the first half, so she couldn't get established either way. It just fell apart quickly. I enjoyed the Satu flashes. Alicia Gray knocked down some tough shots as well, but like something that I said during the playback Twitter space that we held, where I was like, okay, like, Tierra McCowan can draw extra attention. Marina Mabry, when she has it going, she can draw that attention. But beyond those two, like, who are you trusting to carry your offense for a stretch? Like, Alicia Gray is very good. Like, I don't want her to be in that role. Like, that's not her portion. She should be an additive, not Alicia Sabas. And it felt like with those two being taken away, like, she became the natural third. And she scored, but like, that's not going to be the formula for Dallas. Heading into game two, they have to find ways to establish Tierra McCowan. They have to find ways to free Marina Mabry and let her turn a corner somewhere. If they like figure out your spacing to where the empty corner stuff can actually create something positive. Put your best shooter one pass away so the nail help isn't as present. If you can do that, have Alicia Gray above the break. Like, they have to configure their spacing some way to make it easier for everyone involved. Because if not, like, they just don't have the horses. Like, this is where they miss Arike. And this is what I said during the preview, where Connecticut has time to scheme for them now and really sit on their pet actions and really take away, like, I made the joke during the watch party, we were like midway through the first. I'm like, okay, we've seen post-ups for Tierra McCown. We haven't seen the horns. We haven't seen Floppy into the post-up like we were seeing a bunch during the regular season. Like, Connecticut's really freaking good. And they had time to game plan and scout for this. And so I just wonder, like, what are the counters for Dallas to make life easier on their players? Because they don't have Arike to be like, okay, do something for us. Like, she's your bailout. She's more than that. But in this specific situation, Arike would be, okay, the set didn't work. 7 on the shot clock, I will get you something. They just, without her, if Marina's your first option, Tierra's your second, or flip that, your bailout becomes Alicia Gray now. Like, that's just different in terms of shot creation.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. Got to hope that, I don't know.
Not, I don't know. I want better for Dallas. They finished the season very strongly. They played very well to end the regular season. And Connecticut just said, nah, we don't really care about any of that, actually. Jonquel Jones was very good. Alyssa Thomas was very good. And if those two are good on both ends of the floor like they were in this one, it's just tough. I really enjoy watching Alyssa Thomas play defense, by the way. Like, we talked about how good Candace Parker is at hedging out and pick and roll. And I do think Candace is number one. Like, Alyssa Thomas isn't far off.
Oh, no, she's a monster. When she hedges out, and the bonus is when she hedges and then she'll mix in a switch. Doesn't look any different. Usually there's a tell with a defender. When mm-hmm. they're showing out or when they're about to switch, you can tell by the footwork, their placement. No, it looks pretty much the same. Hey, I'm out here and now I'm still here. What's up?
Good luck. And as Mark Schindler has said on our most recent episode, like, he thinks Alyssa Thomas is the best switch big in the W. So it's not like you're getting relief if you do switch her out.
Yeah.
Ah, man. I hope Dallas can give us a better performance in game two. Like, I don't want the season to peter out for them.
Yeah, especially the way they ended it. You win 7 out of 10, you get the 6 seed, you don't have to deal with none of the mess, and then it's this.
Yeah, like, I just, like the Sun are a better team. The Sun should be favored to win this series. I don't want 25-point loss. Nobody wants that.
Did you just wish better for the Wings and then said the Sun are clearly the better team?
Like, they're better. It ain't got to be that. Like, it doesn't have to be that. That's all. I just want to want a better game, too. That's all I got there. Shout out to the Sun. All right, let's close this out with some NBA bookkeeping. First and foremost, I guess not foremost, but first, the Lakers and LeBron James have agreed to a 2-year extension worth a little over $97 million. With that extension, LeBron James has now become the highest earning player in NBA history, accumulating over $532 million in NBA contracts. That is a lot of money. Congrats to him. The Lakers have work to do now. They have LeBron locked in for this season and next. The second year of the extension is a player option, so really a 1+1 on that deal. But they got work to do. I don't know how they reconfigured the roster to close out this offseason. But between that and just the general, like, LeBron's not going to be playing forever, even though he's still really good, they got to turn this into a title contender very fast. And I'm curious to see how they go about doing so.
Salute to LeBron.
There we go. And lastly, we had the official schedule release on Wednesday, which I guess I'll start there. How do you feel about the schedule release becoming like an event now?
What do you mean? It's good for the league. Anything that wasn't a thing that is now a thing is only positive for the league. Like, I'm not into the deepest of deep dives into it. Like, oh, they're going to lose XYZ to start the season. Oh, no. You don't know. But it's fun. I mean, I remember when I used to work in the league, it was always an event because it was like, which birthdays am I going to miss? Which holidays am I going to miss? Oh, man. What's the longest road trip of the year? Okay, we're good. when do we go to Portland? So it's nice to see fans get excited about it and talk about it. And anytime the NBA can have people talking about basketball in August, that's a plus for them. So for me, it's kind of cool to see people get into it. I thought the early leaks were a little off, and I get it, salute, but it was a lot to me. I think once they got to the Paolo DeJounte first matchup, I was like, all right, man.
Yeah, that's the one that kind of caught us. Because, like, it's so funny because, like, I was going to make a joke about, like, when that stuff was happening. I was like, oh, man, I wonder when they're going to face off. And I don't even remember if I actually tweeted that out or not. But I was like, I wonder when they're going to face off. I was not expecting an actual Chris Haynes tweet like, hey, here's a matchup to look out for. Magic at Hawks. Because Paolo and DeJounte Murray are going to face off, Which, I mean, if you can market that, then, like, I don't think there's a downside to it, but I did find that funny. Also, while we're on the Magic, if we're going to get into, because I'm the Kais, I have to be annoyed about something. But
oh, you're annoyed about Orlando and Oklahoma City starting a TNT doubleheader on November 1st?
I'm not not upset about that. I am upset that that's the only the only TNT matchup. That's the only pure national TV matchup, I should say. Like, I get NBA TV is technically a national television broadcast, but, like, not everyone has NBA TV. Like, I don't know how to... At any rate, the best way to introduce the national audience to teams of lesser status is to put them on television so people can see them. Because while not everyone has NBA TV, that's also very much true for League Pass. Like, I think if you think, like, Paolo's going to be big time in 2 or 3 years, like, start setting the seeds now. He was literally the number one overall pick. Why is he on national television once?
Because the Magic aren't good and probably might not be good. So
you can, but much like they set the doubleheader for, what was it, Magic Thunder?
Yeah.
Like, you can do that for the young teams more than once.
Here's the issue, Nikias.
Okay.
The issue is the young teams are usually going to be their most intriguing and interesting win. Win.
Yep. Oh, see, I didn't know which win you were going for. The ball has gone out of bounds. My apologies, sir.
That's all right. It's early in the season.
Okay.
That's when those young teams are going to be the most interesting buzz-wise. That's why that national TV game is early. The issue is, guess who else is interesting?
The not young teams.
Every other team in the league at that point. So... And you're competing with other sports, we'll put it that way. So I could see how they lean on some of those. And I think part of it is also the depth that these networks might see in the league. Like, for me, when I looked at, so I like to always scroll through the national doubleheaders real quick. You saw a lot more variety in the early time slot. Like, just a lot more Mavs, Grizz, Bulls, Pelicans, Bucks, Sixers, Celtics. So it kind of squeezes some of those young teams. And so why would I go with them when I can pick two out of these nine teams that they're out there? I got a good matchup every week. I'm trying to find a way to get Trae Young on TV. What do you want me to do with this?
Like, I feel that. I guess my counter would be, you say that the young teams are more intriguing earlier in the season. I think front loaded in a way, if you can. Because I get the argument against that is, like, okay, the Magic are going to be, like, Gary Harris is going to be playing in March or something like that. It's very much going to be, okay, we're letting all the young talent loose now. Like, OKC the last 2 years have just sat their best. Well, not sat, but you get what I'm saying. Like, the talent drops in OKC after the All-Star break. And so I can understand not wanting to see, like, the 40% version of the Thunder on national television in March or April. I feel like that's more incentive to say, okay, hey, here's Shea, here's Josh Giddey, here's Chet Holmgren. Let's get them in November, December, January, since they aren't going to quote-unquote matter once you get in the playoff races. That's when you're going to want to see those marquee matchups more, I feel like.
You ain't listen to what I said.
I did. I'm just... You're right. I'm just saying... You are correct. I'm just annoyed by it. That's all I'm saying.
No one wants to watch the Magic, bro. That's good.
Well, there went that. And so and now you understand why I get all the Chumo Kiki jokes from Steve. This is why. I just get bullied. It's fine. But I don't know. Like that, I just saw that and that kind of, it just threw me off. It's like, there's so much young talent in the league. There's so much younger talent that's coming up through the pipeline. Like, plant the seeds. That's all I'm saying. Like, showcase your younger talent so people know what's coming up. But again, you're not wrong in what you've said. Like, the explanation makes sense.
Yeah, I'm just here, man. It's all about the money.
Oh, folks, we've done it. Well, that's all I had on that. I'm off my soapbox.
Okay.
So we are good. Any closing remarks?
I had a question for you.
What's up?
So I was looking at the pool. So looking at a pool of notable free agents that are still available in the NBA.
Okay.
Just want to read this list off to you.
All right.
LaMarcus Aldridge, Dwight Howard, DeMarcus Cousins, Montrezl Harrell, Hassan Whiteside, Carmelo Anthony, Trevor Ariza, Blake Griffin, Paul Millsap, Rodney Hood, Andre Iguodala, Jeremy Lamb, Ben McLemore, DJ Augustin, Dennis Schroeder, Rajon Rondo. How many players on that list have you slandered in the last 365 days?
Wow. Slander? Like, I would set the over-under at, like 3.5. I would probably go under on that. You would probably disagree, I would imagine. Also, on that point, Dennis Schroeder still being a free agent is weird to me. Like, why is he still on the market?
There's a thing with point guards where you have to hit your window while you can and take it to the next level, which I'm not saying Schroeder didn't do. But once that window misses, you kind of fall into this zone where we are cool with who we have as a starter. You are too good to be our backup. We cannot handle the situation, so we're just not going to sign you. It's kind of like when someone like reads a tweet and they're like, hey, there are words in here that I don't necessarily understand or I don't know what you meant. So I'm going to be upset with what you said.
Ah, I see. This is the Kevin Hart clip from 40-Year-Old Virgin. I understand what you're saying to me, so I'm just going to take this disrespect. I got you. Like, it's weird. Like, Dennis Schroeder's still on the market. Like, Eric Bledsoe is still on the market. Like, it's weird. Like, he could be a third guard somewhere. But I guess that just goes to your point. Like, does he want to be a third guard somewhere? Probably not. Like, Dennis Schroeder has been the, hey, I can start guy pretty much his entire career. So I get it. That just an oddity. Like, I wonder how that plays out as we get closer to the season, or maybe he ends up being like a mid-season pickup somewhere. If he's on the market that long, though, that's, I don't know. Anyway, not much slander from this end, I don't think.
What are you looking forward to more on Sunday? The Wings Sun game, or Udonis Haslem making his announcement on his future clients in the NBA?
I want to see what the UD decision is. I am intrigued. Because either he comes back and we just do this all over again, it's going to be another season of jokes on the pod, or he doesn't come back and he transitions into a role within the organization, which is literally whatever. So we'll see. I want to see what is going to, I'm happy for our sake that it's happening on Sunday, because we're just going to end up leading the pot with this on Monday. So let's see what happens with UD.
That's all I have, man.
Okay. Well, then, I am good to go right now. So, peel the curtain back. It is nearly 1 a.m. now on the East Coast as we are doing post-game pod stuff. So, we are going to wrap this up. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Please join The Dunker Spot community. If you have not already, we're having some fun discussions in there, a lot of jokes. Please join the Dunker Spot watch parties. We are having an absolute blast in there between watching W playoff games, watching some classic NBA games. We just watched Sixers Raptors from 2001 earlier in the week. We're having a lot of fun. So vibe with us. Also, Steve, one quick question for you before we close this out.
What's up?
When are you playing Madden 23?
I'm playing right now. I'm in the John Madden Legacy game. Hey, for anyone's here, all right, Nikai's is making fun of me because I pre-ordered Madden 23, and I did not know how it worked. So I had the early access, but I didn't know how it worked. And so I thought just because you got the early access, like, it would just download on its own. And clearly it didn't. So I was sitting there like, where's Madden? And I couldn't figure out how to download Madden. I was like, I bought this. Where is it? And I finally got it. So I downloaded it. My early access was like 30 minutes before everyone else, which is fantastic. Playing the Madden Legacy game.
Man, got late access. You love to see it.
You feel good about yourself? Feel good about that?
Not really. Hey, this is all I have.
No, it's fine. I am not afraid to take an L.
That's all I got. I'm still really from Brentford. So.
They play this weekend?
No, I think they're playing Monday.
Oh, so. Who they play? Yeah.
We're playing Liverpool, so we may be going UD announcement into Liverpool just waxing United. I may just be the saddest man on the planet heading into recording, but you know,
about to turn you into a pool of tears.
Unbelievable. All right, with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Madden.